Welcome to another episode of Living an Alder Life. My name is Mike, and this week's guest is a awesome runner who just kicked butt at Grindstone UTMB, and I'm really, really excited to have this guy on here. So let's bring on Mr. Anthony Arthur. Ready to go for a run?
Sounds good.
So, well, let's just jump into it. Tell us a little bit about who Anthony is, what you do for work, family, all that good stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess on the professional side of the house, I'm a defense contractor. I work in project management, specifically software IT type projects. And then I'm also in the Air National Guard out of Pennsylvania. I'm a cyberspace officer with a unit there. And as of recently, very recently, I accepted an offer to go fill a vacant active duty position in Germany. So we are in our transit right now, just checked into a hotel 10 minutes ago in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we'll be on a plane in the morning to Germany. The whole family's coming with me. I've got two children, a daughter and a son, almost five and almost two. And everyone's real excited for our Euro trip. And I'm already getting lectured from the wife that she's trying to limit how many races I sign up for over there.
Oh, baloney. UTMB awaits, man.
I'm going to throw all my eggs in the UTMB basket and try to knock out a few of those races.
That would be awesome.
If I'm over there, you know, you might as well accrue as many stones as possible to increase your odds. Knowing my luck, I'll come back to the States, and that's when I'll get into UTMB, and I'll have to travel back over.
That would be how it goes, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. That is awesome. So, have you researched some of the running routes around Ramstein?
A little bit. There's an area called the Black Forest, which is very close by, and we don't have our permanent housing set up just yet. But one of the boxes that I want to check is, you know, is there a local trailhead in that village to kind of give me access to the woods? That's kind of high on my list. I want to be able to dip out and disappear into the German countryside whenever I want.
I'm jealous now. Cool. Well, congratulations and thank you for serving. That's going to be awesome.
Correct. Yeah.
How did you end up in Norfolk?
So that was another, it was we were wanting to move out of Pennsylvania, and this is before kids. And I took some orders down in Biloxi, Mississippi on the coast there. And that was actually when COVID hit. So we moved down there for like a 6-month order. We had an apartment. I mean, right on the beach, like you walk across the road and your toes are in the sand. Wow. And we were there for a month. COVID hit and we wound up staying down there through the 6-month tour. But I was doing all my work remotely from that, you know, beachside apartment.
That killed you, didn't it?
It did. But I mean, our full intentions were to go to Biloxi and then move somewhere mountainous to leave Pennsylvania. And we kind of fell in love with the coastline and weren't ready to give it up. And so we started looking at areas and it was, all right, where is there a good defense industry? Where is there, a good coastline? And then, what's commutable to Pennsylvania to see family? And that Norfolk kind of checked all those boxes. So we've been there for about 5 years now.
Cool. That is amazing. Wow. So have you always been a runner? Because you're incredibly talented as a runner. So just in case people think that this guy is a one-shot wonder, this guy's amazing. But so have you been a runner all your life or what?
Well, first, I appreciate the compliments. That's unwarranted and debatable, I think. But I have. So kind of a soccer background growing up, and that's I guess where I got the start of my endurance legs, and that transitioned into, cross country in high school. It's funny now after, running for years, even looking back at high school, my position in the stack or the rank of a group of people is always the same. It's kind of back of the front of the pack, front of the middle of the pack, and I end up spending a lot of time alone during races because I don't fit into either category. But yeah, so the running kind of started back in cross country. I wasn't anything spectacular. I was running somewhere between 19 and 21 minute 5Ks. Took a long hiatus. And then 10 years ago this year, so 2015, I ran the Air Force Marathon. And
Oh,
that was a
wow.
kind of, hey, you're getting a little softer around the waistline. Time to try something and challenge yourself. So did that, and then almost every single year I've kind of had some sort of endurance goal to strive for. I think out of the 10 years, I had one lazy year. So Air Force Marathon, didn't know what I was doing, just kind of went out and ran it with a friend. We carried an American flag the whole way. That was pretty cool. And being an Air Force guy, that's a was a kind of a bucket list race for me.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Being an Air Force guy, that had been a lot of fun.
It was. It's a very cool big race, and having the military background kind of helps. I mean, the course gets kind of boring out there, as a lot of road races do. But the final stretch is through the what they call the bomb run, and so it's all the old retired aircraft lined
Oh,
up,
wow.
and you run down through the middle of it, and the crowd's going nuts, and very cool race.
That's awesome. That sounds fun.
Yeah, and then after that, I pivoted into triathlons solely because my sister was getting into that, older sister by about 3 years, and she started signing up for these races, and it sounded cool. And I think it just turned into like one of those holiday sibling rivalry conversations where she said she was doing this, and I was, I could go out there, I beat you, I could do it. And so it was over one of those conversations I challenged her to the Olympic distance, like the middle distance triathlon.
Okay,
Trained for a
so not the
while.
70.2. Is that the one?
Not the one right below that.
Okay, all right.
So then she beat me, and she made sure to rub it in my face.
She
And
hasn't quit reminding you, or is she still
then
reminding you she beat you in the first one?
she still does. And so that was 2016, and 2017, she was signed up for a full Ironman. So I was like, I'll beat you in that. And so I jumped from that, the short distance triathlon, right to the full, and she beat me again.
Awesome.
So then after the Ironman training, I kind of realized that I wasn't a fan of cycling, and
Okay.
triathlons are 60% cycling. So then pivoted back towards running. The following year was my obstacle course racing year.
Oh,
And so
wow.
I wanted to try every single race that was out there and figure out what was the hardest. So Spartan races, Tough Mudders, whatever. I always forget the, there's another one. It's a Blue Savage race. Did all of those, and I did every distance of the Spartan Mountain race series, and that was kind of like a pivot point into trail running. That was like my gateway drug, I guess. That year culminated with the Killington Ultra Spartan, so 34 miles and 16,000 feet of vert,
With all the obstacles and everything.
with all the obstacles. That, I mean, that race is, it's nuts. I actually came back from that race and went to work, and like 4 days had gone by, and I still couldn't walk right. My feet were
Oh,
hurting.
wow.
And I went and got my feet x-rayed because I thought I had like stress fractures in them. Luckily, I didn't. Just everything was fried, all the
Wow.
ligaments. So then that year turned into, I kind of scratched that itch of the trail running community. And I did another year or two of marathon stuff, but I was increasing the distance and had my eyes on the ultra distance. And it just kind of, it's crazy how, I'm sure you have your own story of how it's evolved, from, 5Ks, 10Ks, whatever, all the way up to, the longest distance you've done. But the last couple years have been real heavy on the ultra side of the house.
What year was your first ultra marathon?
Think it was 2021.
Okay.
It was June of 2021. I'm pretty sure. Maybe 2022. I'd have to look at
Okay.
my sign up. That was a 50 miler in just outside of Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh,
First
is
weekend
that
of
the
June.
hellhole one?
It is, yeah.
Oh, cool. I've heard of that. I've heard that's a blast.
Yeah, I thought it sounded as a good transition point from road to trail because there wasn't a ton of elevation, flat looped course. The only thing that you're battling is they've got it on their site, but it's like four different types of venomous snakes,
What?
alligators, and mosquitoes or something like
Fun.
that.
There you go. Sign me
Yeah.
up.
So that was a very hot suffer fest, and it was a very small race too, but that was kind of my entry in to where it's like, all right, I've co completed a respectable, ultra distance. That sometimes the
Right.
50K doesn't get you the street cred yet. So then instantly, since that went well, I was already starting to eye up 100K and 100 mile distances after
Okay.
that.
Yeah, might as well just jump all the way up, right?
Yeah. I mean, don't hang out in one spot too long.
That's right.
Double
That's right. I expect a 200
the
out of you soon, so.
distance. I might have my eyes on
Okay.
that.
All right. Swami Shuffle 200 is a blast, man.
I'll keep that one on the radar, but I think I'm drawn towards the vert.
I
So
know
the rate.
you're a vert crazy man, so. What your first hundred was your first 100 Eastern States?
Yeah, so my first attempt at 100 was Eastern States in 2023.
Okay.
So that year I was deployed for the first half of the year and was training in the Middle East and just trying to get vert wherever I could. But I also had no clue of what to think of the 100K or the 100 mile distance. I mean, my longest run to date was that 50 mile run.
Okay.
So I was like, I'll figure it out. I made it through the 50. I can make it through the 100 miler. Why not? Same. And I was rudely awakened. So I was humbled on that course.
Yeah.
The vert got me, and my knees were falling apart before I hit mile 40. My knees were already, aching, which is a little too early for severe pain.
Yeah, and you haven't even made the big climb. Right? Isn't the big climb like at 68 or something like that, where it's like, oh my God, does it ever end?
That's a Gillespie's point, I think, and yeah, that one's brutal. Yeah, you've got that right. And there's a bunch of brutal climbs. So
Yeah.
I dropped at the 100K distance, which would have been the Slate Run or now Tomb Flats aid station.
Okay.
And there's a really cool river crossing there. I mean, you're crossing like, I don't know, 40 yards of the rushing Pine
Oh,
Creek.
wow.
And they put up a rope up ahead and overhead, and you're like hanging off that, and you're sliding on the massive, I mean, big flat slate slabs of
Oh,
rock that
wow.
are like the sizes of trucks. And you're kind of sliding all over that. And the party on the other side of the river is the aid station, and everyone's cheering and laughing at people falling in, and it's just a real good time.
That's
Well, it
awesome.
wasn't a
And the whole trail, though, is. I mean, it's Roxylvania, so it's just brutal footing the whole way, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it's terrible. Roxylvania really lives up to its name, but that's part of the fun up there, and the community that's up in that PA Wilds corner of a northwest corner of Pennsylvania is kind of in love with the rocks and proud of it.
Yep.
But yeah, so very rocky, very technical, and then when your legs start falling apart. It makes it even harder.
Yeah.
So yeah, took a DNF there. We had some like a 4 hour thunderstorm in the middle of the night, and I was
Wow.
already in the back of the pack, and the trails just turned to like mud soup, and
Oh.
you couldn't tell if you were going to drop like an inch down and hit a rock, and then that'd be it, or if you were going to drop like 8 inches down in mud and then slip out and fall down the hill. I was falling all over the place, and my knees were so weak from the lack of elevation training that I was seriously concerned of like, I was like one bad fall away from, tumbling down some steep rocky hillside
Yeah.
and, really hurting myself. So I swallowed my pride and turned in my bib. But I think looking back now, I probably could have death marched it if I wanted to, if I
Right.
really, really wanted to, but it wouldn't have lit the fire for the next 2 years. All in all, everything has a silver lining.
Yep, exactly. So then you went back kind of into like the 50K, 50 miler. Didn't you do a you did you do Black Forest 100K in between? Was that last year?
So 24 would have been my blacklist year, which is the in the Pennsylvania running community. There's the Pennsylvania Triple Crown of trail running, and that
Okay.
includes Heiner 50K, which is my all-time number one favorite race. I will go back to that party every single year as long as I can. That is April, mid-April. It's around 7,000 feet of vert on classic rocky technical terrain, but it's one of those races where you get a little bit of everything. So you have
Okay.
nice gradual downs that you can really fly on. You got nice gradual douche grade climbs that you could shuffle through if you want. It's got you're on all fours going up a steep,
Wow.
cliffside. You got vistas and views and big crowds, and you got New Trail Brewing. They sponsor the event for Craig Fleming, the race director, and I was told that the math that they do on how much free beer to drop off at the start finish line is 8 beers per runner,
My
and
gosh.
and so there's like 1,200 runners through the 25K and 50K that day, and so they just drop off pallets of
That's great.
cases of beer in the field, and they have on-site camping that's like $20 for primitive camping, and everyone just stays
Wow.
after and hangs out.
There you
Um,
go.
it's
That's
great,
awesome.
great way to kick off, the trail running season. But yes, so blacklist year, the Heiner is the first one, and then a couple months later is the for the Triple Crown is Heiner, and then World's End 100K, which is at World's
Okay.
End State Park. That's one of the most beautiful races I've ran. Lots of waterfalls, lots of good vistas. I mean, you're not it's very rocky again. And then the culmination of the Triple Crown is Eastern States. So Eastern States last year was canceled due to the tropical storm Debby. Everyone showed up to Little Pine Creek State Park for the race. I mean, the race was on. The storm there
Yep.
was some flooding, and the region was flooded out, but they were rerouting the course. They were looking at like the stream crossings and making sure that they could still have the race. And then at 4:30 in the morning, the race is supposed to start at 5. At 4:30 in the morning, the governor declared a proclamation of disaster for the region, and that essentially said there is no entertainment type events that are going to occur during a proclamation of disaster. So
Are you
the
serious? So 4:30 in the morning for a 5 a.m. start, it's canceled.
Yep, we were all standing there with our packs. I was walking up to the start line and saw that the race director Ben Mazur had just, addressed everyone. And some guy comes walking back towards me and he said, "Hey man, don't even bother going over it. They just canceled the race." We were standing there. I mean, you got 350 runners ish, all ready to go, caffeinated,
Yeah, charged up.
yeah.
Wow.
And so everyone was kind of just in complete disbelief, and everyone starts kind of grouping up, and it was a very weird environment to experience because everyone still wanted to run. Some people wanted to figure out how they could get the aid station food back to the community. So if the community was in a state of disaster, we've got all this food ready to go for aid
Right.
stations. How do we get it to the community? And then I was bundled up in the group of crazy people that were just looking for anyone that was willing to go for a long run. And
Wow.
so a lot of people went out and did runs. It just varied on some people were like, "Hey, I'm going to go to do 10 miles." Other people said they were going to go do 40 and run because they knew that certain stretches weren't flooded out.
Okay.
I lumped myself in with a group of runners that were going to do the Call of the Wilds 50K course. So it's
Okay.
another race up there, and the first 17 miles of that course are the exact same as Eastern States.
Okay.
So no cell service, no way to communicate to anyone. My wife and my kids and my mother, they're all and my the rest of my crew are up at the campground. And so it's, I don't know, like 5:30 in the morning now by the time we figured that out. And I ran up there real quick and woke my wife up, said, "Hey, I'm gonna go run a 50K. I'll be back around lunchtime. I'll see you then." And so ran went back down, and I essentially just packed nutrition for a 50K,
Okay.
and I can get through a 50K on just tailwind. So that was kind of my goal. And we were all running, and during that run, everyone was kind of chatting about how bummed they were. And I started talking to this one guy, Gabe, and said, "I kind of still just want to go. Like, if it gets bad, we can turn around, run back to the next road, whatever." I was like, "I just want to, I was like, I got to do this. I got to do it."
Oh,
And
no way. Did you go for it?
did. So.
Oh my, that's awesome. I love it.
So we got to mile 17, and that's where the Eastern States course goes left and the Call of the Wilds course goes right. And we were with a group of about 9 people, and I looked at Gabe and I was like, "I'll go to the next aid station if you do." And he's like, "All right, let's go." And so he told his wife, who was there at mile 17, to like give him some aid, and said, "Hey, meet us at Brown's Run, the next aid station down." And we took it one aid station at a time, and every
Oh
time we
my
rolled
gosh.
in, it was just, "You want to go one more? You want to go one more?" And so we wound up doing 80 miles together, the two of us, and then there was a group of two other guys, Adam
Okay.
Kolb and one other guy, I forget his name, but they were out running the course as well. And so at that point, when we decided to continue on, there's still no cell service, so
My gosh.
I told the one guy that was part of the original group that was going to run back. I was like, "Hey, when you get back to, Little Pine State Park," I was like, "you mind driving up to Happy Acres Campground and site 3 and 4? My wife and my mother are staying up there, and just let her know that I'm gonna keep running the course." And to meet me at Heiner Run, which is like mile 42, with my tote full of all my nutrition and stuff.
Awesome.
So I essentially just had to survive till 42 until I could re-up all my supplies, and saw them there. We went through the night. Gabe's wife and kids crewed us at every single would-be
Oh
aid
my
station,
gosh. All
every
through the
single
night.
one, all through the night. We hit mile 80 at sunrise, and I picked up one of my buddies to pace me for like 10 miles. And Gabe is a rock star runner, so he I think he was excited to just take off
Okay.
and leave my slow pace behind. So he took off, and he wound up finishing the last 20-ish miles solo. I ran 10 with my buddy, and then my wife joined in for the last 12-ish
That's
miles.
awesome.
Yeah,
Oh, that
and
is awesome. So you didn't get in trouble because your wife joined you for the last 12, right?
right, exactly. And
There
that
you
was
go.
her, super proud. That was her one of her
That is
longest
awesome.
runs ever, and she did awesome. But
So your
it was cool.
first unofficial official 100-miler was one that didn't happen. How long did it end up taking you?
To be honest, I always forget. It was so slow sometimes with the flooded out
Oh
trails,
yeah.
or even in the last 20 miles. I mean, my nutrition was so off, because my nutrition plan was tailwind, baseline, and then eat food at the aid stations. Well, I
Yeah,
didn't.
now you don't have aid stations.
And so I was eating like Gabe's kids, like Cheez-Its and Goldfish and gummies and stuff like that. I had to just
Wow.
whatever scraps they had for me. So anyways, I walked a lot. I didn't know how to run right. I think my moving time on Strava was like 30, 31, but the total time had to have been 34, 35,
Okay.
somewhere around there.
So you made it in the 36-hour cutoff.
I did, and
Yeah, so there you go.
the race director was kind enough to give us the Eastern States finisher Ultra Spire running vests,
Awesome.
but he didn't give me the buckle.
No way. That is awesome. But did you make the
Yeah.
blacklist? Because that would have been the final blacklist. Did he give you blacklist?
So I didn't get, so there was no PA Triple Crown because
Ah.
that race was canceled. And then I was like, all right, well, I unofficially, officially did the Triple Crown. So I'm going to go and I'm going to do the Black Forest to get the blacklist.
Okay.
And I did not want to. I was completely burnt out by this point in the season and had just been training nonstop since Eastern States 2023. So I went out and did it. It was a terrible race. I was just suffering through that one. And I crossed the finish line and I had to because I was
Well,
unofficially, officially the only blacklist finisher of
wow.
2023 or twenty
Wow.
24. Yeah.
Congratulations. I'll count it as official.
Yeah, I got
Not that
a
my opinion matters one bit.
yeah. Hey, I'll take it. I'm proud of it, and it's official in my book.
No kidding. That's awesome. Congrats, man. That's
Yeah.
incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
So
yeah.
that was your first 100. And so now you go through 20. Did you do a last man standing this year too?
I did, yeah.
Where was that?
So that one was in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. It was
Okay.
a low run company event. They've got a what seems to be a real tight-knit community of trail runners over there.
Okay.
If I was staying in the area, I'd probably keep an eye on a couple of their races. They seem like a fun group. But yeah, so last man standing, I just wanted to test the format out. I didn't have any like good why in the back of my head to really fight it out. I just wanted to see how it went, and I was kind of squeezing it into the calendar. Like there, I didn't really have much time. I had like 2 weekends to choose from for the year. But anyways, went out. It was the typical format. I want to say it was about 500 feet of gain. It was 300 to 500 feet of gain per loop.
Wow.
So it had.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I think I finished. It was around 72 miles, like 17-ish hours, so 17 yards. And it was, I'd have to look back. I want to say it was around like 10,000 feet of vert on that one, but it didn't
Wow.
feel like it. Yeah, it didn't
Okay.
feel like it because you're breaking it up over each yard. The backyard is on my horizon. I don't have
Okay.
anything signed up yet, but I want to go back to that format with a good why in the back of my head, and I think I could do pretty well.
Yeah. And a really solid crewman. I think that's one of the important things at backyards. Gotta have a solid crew person.
Yeah, that's probably good advice. I did that 72 without a crew.
Yeah.
And I bet if I had someone at the 17th yard and I said, I think I'm good, they were like, no,
Yeah,
go get back
they
out
would have
there.
sent you out there. Yeah, I'm actually crewing for a friend at Andy's backyard. And he's like, so your whole thing is to keep on shoving me out whether I want to or not. I said, oh, you don't get to quit until you can't physically move again. So, you know,
Yeah.
that's so
What do they say?
I,
Quit on the trail, not on the chair.
yep, exactly. So when did you decide, okay, I'm going to sign up for Grindstone UTMB?
Oof. I think when did I sign up for that
So this
officially? I
was kind
had
of a
been.
last minute thing, wasn't it?
It was. I had my eye on it, so I was kind of like maintaining my like running mileage per week, et cetera, to be ready to jump into a 100 build. Grindstone was on my list, but I was afraid to commit to it because this whole Germany move was happening
Right.
and we didn't know when we were leaving yet. So I was kind of just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then once it got to a point where I was like, all right, I think I'm good. I'm not going to be on a plane to Germany on September 1st. It'll at least be October 1st. I signed up. And so
Okay.
I had around a 9 to 10 week build.
Okay.
but really only had like a solid 4 to 5 weeks of high elevation, high vert
Yeah.
training. And then after that, I tapered out just with some family vacations and stuff going on, but I kept the time on feet and the elevation gain up through those. Just didn't really hit my mileage goals. Going into that race, I would say I could have used probably another like good 2 week build
Right.
to really, really feel confident going into it. But I went into it with enough confidence, knowing that I could get to the finish line.
Was that when you decided, okay, Adam's crazy, I'm gonna go start doing Mount Trashmore with him?
Yeah, so Adam is crazy. You got
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
that
No denying
part
that.
right. And so Trashmore and the Lesnar Bridge and the Jordan Bridge and the Hampton Roads area, those were my like go-to hills for Eastern States training in the past. And once I linked up with doing some runs with Adam, like I think the year prior, and found out how often, he was going out there, yourself was going out there. I definitely ramped up my time at Trashmore this year because it's the
Okay.
best vert per mile you can get in the area. It's monotonous, it's terrible. And if you've got a listener that doesn't know what Mount Trashmore is, I mean, it's 50
The
foot.
worst. It's absolutely the
It's
worst.
50 a 50 foot hill with no trees. You got
But it's the
varying
only place
inclines.
in Hampton Roads where you can get, off kilter work so that you can get your ankles used to turning and twisting, because pavement bridges will only get you so far.
That's right. And so I think my proudest week of training, I did over 10,000 feet of vert at Mount Trashmore in a
Yeah.
week. And I didn't I don't think I ran anywhere else that week. It was all at
Yep.
Trashmore, like every day, if not twice a day. It was like 70, 80 miles that week and 10,000 feet of vert at
Oh, on
Trashmore.
Trashmore. I was gonna say, I think my best week at Trashmore was a 6,800.
Yeah, I had quite a few weeks out there where, yeah, most of the vert was coming from that. Luckily, I've got family in Pennsylvania. I go up for military stuff to the Pennsylvania Air National Guard, and I was able to change it up and do some training runs sprinkled in throughout that block.
Right. On normal vert, right? So
I gotta say,
take us to Grindstone. So you show, well, no, you're finishing something. So finish what you're saying, then take us to Grindstone.
No, let's go to Grindstone. That
Okay,
sounds
so
good.
take us to the start, because Grindstone is one of those oddball 100 milers. It starts in the evening, not in the morning. So how did that affect you?
It's definitely a challenge, and I kind of leaned on Black Forest 100K in the
Okay.
past as a slight reference point because that's a midnight start on 100K.
Right.
And my strategy there didn't really work, and I had a hard time the second day with sleep deprivation. And so going into this one, I knew I wanted to get into the area Thursday, plenty of time to relax and get the travel out of my system, and wanted to sleep as long as I could in the morning. And then I made a big priority to like block out like a 2 hour block during the day for either a nap or just resting the pre-race jitters. And then that's really the best you could do as far as like preparing for a 6 p.m. start. The cool thing about the 6 p.m. start is no one's rushing. You're not waking up early. You got a full night's sleep the night before. I didn't have the pre-race jitters the way you do before a race where, you get 5 hours of sleep, but it's crappy 5 hours of sleep. I mean, I had a
Yep.
full 8, 9 hours of good sleep, and the jitters didn't start until like that, the nap in the afternoon. That's the only thing it really affected. Another positive that I was looking at it for was going through the night on fresh legs and a fresh mind. I think that in comparison to my nighttime performances in the past on tired legs, going into it with fresh legs, I mean, night one was a breeze. Like it
Okay.
was not difficult to really get through at all as far as sleep deprivation goes. And then you hit the morning, 6 a.m. ish. I think I hit the 42-mile aid station where I could pick up my pacer right about sunrise.
Oh wow, that's awesome. You had
So
really
hitting.
good weather the first night, right?
Oh yeah, it was excellent. No rain, perfectly dry on the days leading up to the race. So the trails were nice and crisp. The temperatures weren't cold at all. It was, I think, high 50s
Okay, that's great. That's perfect
was
weather.
like the low. Yeah,
Yeah.
all the course markings through the night were. I'll give it to Grindstone on that. They did a good job with that. The course is very, very runnable in
Yeah.
comparison to my previous Rocksylvania year.
Yeah.
I ran with a good friend of mine from Pennsylvania. She's an absolute beast of a runner. Rhoda Smoker. She wound up getting fourth female
Oh,
at
wow.
Grindstone. Yeah,
Oh, that's awesome.
and finished in like 27 hours.
Holy smokes.
She's outstanding. I can't say enough good things about her. But it was cool to. I think we did probably 25, 30 miles together through the night, which is
Awesome.
cool. So I hit the morning, picked up an Air Force buddy of mine who's, I mean, high energy, whether you, it doesn't matter what time of day it is. He's just one of those real hyper high energy, funny guys. And
Awesome.
so a perfect complement to hitting sunrise and trying to take the energy of the sun and stay awake. And we set out from there on what we called the lollipop stretch
Yep.
of the course.
Which is
So you
actually the
have
hard part of the course now. So, right?
it was the worst part. It
Yep.
was out of the entire course, that was the hardest. So if someone was listening, the way I had described it to other people was the course is kind of like a figure eight, and you start going through the figure eight, and when you get to the top of the figure eight, that's where they inject this little lollipop section, and then you drop back into the figure eight and double back on like the middle portion of that figure eight to the finish. But the lollipop reminded me of Rocksylvania. So very technical on the loop, and then you come around, and it's funny when we were going out on the stick of the lollipop, the first place runner was coming in,
Oh, wow.
and we were going down this real steep hill, and he's going up the hill, and we both said that we wished like we had taken a picture of this guy, because the look on his face was just like he was like cursing the hill.
Oh my gosh.
His poles were stuck like way outside. It was like a very dramatic, like wide leg, wide stance walk up, leaning on his poles, and this look of like, when the hell is this hill gonna end?
Oh my gosh.
And
That would have been an awesome picture. That would have been
yeah,
great.
I don't think I'll ever forget that guy's face. It was just too funny. So then we went out and we did the lollipop stretch, and I wound up getting some I'd switched my shoes when I picked up the pacer, and it helped for a little bit, but the shoes I weren't battle tested on technical terrain.
Oh.
They were tested on first landing type trails, and the shifting on the technical terrain and rocks. I got some pretty bad blisters during the lollipop on both heels. And anyways, we made it through the technical piece. I knew that when we got back from there, I would have to swap out my shoes again, get the blisters tended to, because I mean, you're still looking at the lollipop finishes at mile 72-ish.
Yeah, so you got another 28 to 30.
Yeah. So blisters start. I mean, that section of the lollipop was a 28-mile stretch, and I think the blisters set in at like mile 8. So it
Oh.
was a fun last 20 miles back to actually be able to get rid of those shoes.
And you had to go up that hill that you saw first place runner coming in with
Yeah.
blisters. That had to been absolutely thrilling.
Yeah. Yeah, the hill that he had come up, we saw why he had that expression on his face, and it was because it was just tons of these like false summits, just one after the other, and You get like a little roller that would go down, maybe 50 feet, and then somehow would climb back up 150 feet. And then a little roller that seemed like it went down 50 feet and then climbed back up like 200 feet. And we kept saying, we're like, I thought we were on the top. How do we keep going up? How does this keep
And this is all
so
not, this is not a buttery trail. So this is technical rocks, not a wide trail too, because it's very single track, if I remember it right.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, so he was a great pacer and kept me positive through all that stuff. Shout out to Dan Callahan. We got into that aid station, the same place I picked him up at, or the start and finish of the lollipop. And that's where we linked up with the Spencers. So Charles and Emily came out to help.
Superstars.
They are superstars. So they know what's going on. They know how to crew, they know how to pace, they know how to race. They've got it down. And so they rolled in and my whole family was there. So that was the first time through the whole race that I got to see like my entire family, my wife,
Oh,
my kids,
great.
my sister, my niece. So we spent a little too much time in that aid station, but it was worth it because that's the kind of motivator that keeps you going. My whole goal for Grindstone was to obviously everyone has like a little bit of a time goal, but more than the time goal, I wanted to be able to run the late miles. That was really it. Like I didn't want to be power walking the last 40 miles. I wanted to get miles in, still moving my feet later on and figure out how to get out of those lows when all you want to do is walk. So picking up Charles at mile 72, and he was going to do 72 to 93 with me. We threw down some pretty good miles in there. He wasn't pushy of a pacer. He wasn't trying to do I don't even know how to describe it. I guess like the alpha male kind of motivation. We're like, hey, hurry up, wimp. Why are you walking? Like that kind of stuff. It was none of that. We had this long gravel road stretch that was like 5 miles, and we were like, we were 80 miles in and doing, 10, 11 minute miles. And it was because of him. He wasn't being pushy, but he was just like, hey, there's another one up there that we can pass. And
There you
we'd
go.
see like someone running like a half mile ahead of us and like, damn it. And most people are shuffling their feet at 15 minute miles. And with us throwing down 10, 11, 12 minute miles on that stretch, I mean, we passed a bunch of people.
Are you in the second night now?
So that was before the night hit. Nighttime hit probably around mile 80. We went into the night and it starts thundering. And it's thundering off in the distance for like, I mean, you're up on a ridge line. So thunder cracking out in the mountains. I mean, it could never even touch you. It's off in the distance for what felt like half an hour to an hour. We just hear it, but no rain, nothing. And I had dropped my rain jacket with my family when we went into the daytime miles. And I was like, oh, I'll pick it up when I see you at like 6 o'clock or something at one of the aid stations with Charles. And my family got lost, not
Oh,
lost,
no.
but one of the long, like gravel mountain roads they had to go back took like twice as long to get back to the aid station. And they wound up showing up to the aid station like 25 minutes after we had already left. So I went into the night without, my don't tell UTMB, but I didn't have my required gear on me.
Okay, I won't tell him.
So going to the night and I don't have my rain jacket or like a base layer or anything. I'm just I was like, all right, well, we'll figure it out. So sure enough, the storms come and it starts pouring. And I could feel myself getting cold, my body temperature dropping. We were walking a little bit because the trails were starting to flood out and it was hard to see the rocks. And I just flipped a switch in my head and I thought back to the DNF year of Eastern States because the thunderstorms is what wiped me out there. And what wiped me out was I was walking, I was going slow, I was moping,
Getting
I let
colder and
myself get
colder.
colder. Yeah, exactly. And so this time around, I was like, all right, I'm shuffling my feet at a minimum, if not running. We've got It was like 5 miles to the next crude aid station. We were in the middle of a 9 mile stretch from aid station to aid station that had a negative 3,300 feet of vert.
Wow.
So tons and tons of like bone rattling downhill.
Ah.
Yeah, so we had done this stretch earlier. This is the middle of that figure eight. So you do it twice. The first time being mile 24 to 32-ish, and then the second time through it would be probably 85 to 93 or 84 to 93. And so we're in that stretch, and I just thought back to that freezing cold time. I was like, I got to run. So we ran the last 4.5 miles of that through the rain, just pushing and my whole intent was to keep my body temperature up, but my fingers go painfully numb. And so got into that aid station, and all I wanted to do was just warm up a little bit, get my rain like a dry shirt on underneath and my rain jacket over me, and then I'm good. So hopped in my sister's car, was able to change that out, warm my hands up. Took way too long at the aid station, but the whole time going up throughout the race, I wasn't so locked in on the get in and get out of an aid station as fast as possible. I wanted to leave the aid stations feeling strong, feeling mentally, ready for the next stretch. And looking back, I think I could probably cut them in almost half the amount of time that I spent at some of those crude aid stations, but I still like my first year of like Eastern States, I was doing all aid stations at like 2 minutes flat or 3 minutes in and out as fast as possible, and it was too fast. It wasn't enough time to really take care of myself, make sure I suck down like bonus 200 calories or something.
That's a good tip right there for anybody that getting ready to run a 100 miler. You don't have to always be in a hurry because food is actually necessary to finish 100 miles.
It is. It's an eating contest, not a
Yes, it
running
is.
contest. So that aid station was a little rough of coming in, but I headed out on the trail with Emily Spencer now for the final 12 to 13 miles. And now that I made it out, I ran through that stretch. So that was like a big milestone in my head. It was like, just get to that aid station, get dry stuff on, get warmed up, and then you're good. So I make it there, and then all the adrenaline from running the last 4.5 miles wore off, and I
Oh
was
no.
just fatigued,
Tired. Yeah.
tired. I mean, I haven't been that tired in a long, long time. Night two of being up really, really got me, and this is where the race got fun. So I think there was only we had like the 12 miles to do together, and there's one aid station in between, and I want to say it was 6 to 7 miles from where I dropped Charles and picked up Emily to the
Yeah, and it
next
should be
aid
like
station.
5 miles to the end, right? From
Yep,
there.
yep, yep. So that first stretch to the first aid station with Emily, I was falling over, like asleep on the trail. I'll steal. Charles had a good term for trekking poles. He called them agile crutches.
I like that.
And
That's a apt description.
and I was using my agile crutches to kind of keep me vertical, and every now and then would kind of like stumble off to the right. And Emily's, I mean, she's so sweet. She's like, are you okay? I was like, yeah, sorry, just fell asleep there. And we did a lot of walking and not a lot of running in that first like 6 miles, and there wasn't a whole lot of talking either. She was doing a phenomenal job of just engaging me in conversation to try to like wake me up, ask me questions, and just kind of get the mind firing again. And it just wouldn't wake up. And then I started seeing stuff in like the peripheral vision,
Ooh, that's the best. Oh, hallucinations. Those were the most fun. That's the best part, Anthony.
So the peripheral vision stuff where you think you see something in the corner of your eye. I've been there before, like on night runs. That one's, I think, somewhat easy to get to that point for me, and it's very easily manageable. It's more so like you see like a tree stump, and you're like, oh, was that a deer? Or then you look at it and it's like, oh no, that's not a deer, it's just a tree
No.
stump. Well, this race took the hallucinations to like the next level. Like, flat out, my mind was, I don't know how else to describe it outside of it was in like a constant state of like buffering, like trying to load what I was looking at. So my eyes would like look at a bush on the trail upcoming, and I would just be staring at it with like the most confusion ever. Like, what is that? And then like the depths perception or whatever would finally catch up. I'm like, oh, it's a bush. And like, it started with not being able to really identify what something is. And then it turned into seeing actual things and objects that weren't there. So some of those fun hallucinations, and it's weird because I was 100%, mentally with it. There's no,
No.
I didn't have like a euphoric state or any type of that hallucination. Like, you're more confused than you are anything.
Yeah.
And so I look at a bush that had like changing colored leaves, and it was like yellow and green leaves. And it was, I saw like a group of like, I don't know, 6 to 10 like leprechauns on the side of the trail.
Yeah,
And
they're called gnomes. They're gnomes. That's what they are. Did they talk to you?
no, it wasn't anything like that. Everything was
Wow,
more
because
so like stationary and like more
those are
like a
the
garden.
best. Those are at, and you'll never forget it. So I was pacing my friend Matt at Devadog for his first 100, and I had him last 38, I think 38 to 42 miles. And the last 20 miles, he kept on seeing gnomes, and they were telling him that we were going the wrong way. So for 20 miles, he's going, "We're going the wrong way. They said we're going the wrong way." And I'm like, "Who is they?" And he's like, "The gnomes." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, well, just keep going this way. We'll be okay. We're gonna get through this too." So they're the best. The gnomes are awesome.
That's excellent. Well, I saw the gnomes one time, and it was a quick like shake my head or blink my eyes a couple times, and like squint and look at it a little closer, and be like, oh, all right, that's a bush that's just green and yellow leaves, and it translated to a little green outfit with a yellow face and a green hat.
Exactly.
And then I saw like a Thanksgiving turkey
Ah.
decoration, just hanging up like a big turkey, like a stuffed animal type turkey. And that was another, bush that was just brown, red leaves, yellow
Nice,
leaves.
nice.
Saw a giant blue canoe up on the hill, and that turned
Ah.
out to be like a big rock wedge between trees.
These are the best. These are the best stories. This is why we do this stupid stuff.
What else did I see out there? Oh, a big like toucan. That this one was actually moving, but it was probably because the leaves were moving. But it was a big green like toucan bird flying with a big
Huh.
yellow beak, and it was the same thing, just greens and yellows from the foliage. Lots and lots of snakes. The worst. Everything was still wet, so the roots are shiny. And they all had like the copperhead kind of like
Yeah.
banding over them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just nonstop with that. Another one that got me that was a little weird, and it wasn't a specific object, was looking ahead at a trail. There's puddles from the rain, and puddles on the trail, at a distance with your headlight hitting them, it looks like a puddle of black water. So looking at it from that angle, it's flat on the ground, but it's a somewhat sphere or circle. And my brain was taking that sphere or circle, and it was turning it upright. So if it was
Awesome.
a perfect black circle on the trail, I was seeing a perfect black sphere in the middle of the trail to the
Okay, so
point where
like a hole you're gonna walk into,
not
like
even no
vertical.
like think more like a big balloon or a big
Oh,
ball
that's
that's
awesome.
black and is in the trail, and I would get to like 3 feet from it, to the point where like if I was shuffling my feet in a jog, I would stop because I thought I was going to run into something. And then in an instant, like I'd blink or whatever, and it would just go flat again, and it would be the
Oh, man.
puddle, and it would be gone. And so, I mean, not all puddles are a perfect circle. So, you know, if it was like a peanut shape, you know, I'd have this big, like, peanut balloon looking thing in the middle of the trail. So real weird. And I'm telling Emily some of this, but I'm also so tired that it's hard to talk. So, like, some of the stuff I'm seeing, I'm just like not even saying anything about it. It got to the point where I was like, I'm just not gonna say anything. And we get into that last aid station, and she'll laugh at this, but she was lying to me. I swear she was lying to me. She kept telling me that the aid station was like 0.3 away, and I was looking at my watch, and I swear 0.3 went by like four times. Maybe she was telling the truth and I just couldn't count at that point in the race. I don't know. But even she said, she's like, do you think you want to, like, you know, kind of just rest your eyes for a minute at the aid station? And I was like, yes, definitely. I can't do the last like 5 miles like this, falling over. We're not running. We're not talking, you know, seeing things. And so we rolled into the aid station, and they were real nice about it. And I said, hey, I was like, you got a chair somewhere out of the rain? I just want to sit down and like just rest my eyes for like 5 to 10 minutes. And luckily there was a medical tent at that aid station, and they had a cot with a pillow and a blanket.
There
And
you
so
go.
I got to snuggle up with a pillow and a blanket on a cot. Everything instantly started aching, like feet, knees, hips, everything started throbbing, but I was still able to sleep. And
Good.
Emily let me sleep for 15 minutes.
Awesome.
And I popped up. It was a little hard to get the fluids going again in the joints for a minute, but I was awake. The whole fatigue thing was gone. Like 15 minutes, I mean, just knocked it all out. It was gone. So right out the gate, I was like, all right, well, I was like, I really don't want to do this, Emily. I was like, but let's shuffle our feet a little bit. Let's see if the legs are going to want to work at all. And
Wow.
so we shuffled our feet for a little bit, and I want to say out of the 4.5 miles, we probably ran 1.5 to 2 of those
Awesome. Good.
4.5 miles. And we actually got to have like good conversations. So, you know, I was
Good.
awake. I was
You're
back
awake
to,
enough
you
to
know,
actually talk.
yeah. And so got to know Emily a little bit because, you know, we haven't ran a whole lot together in the past. So that was nice. And one of the highlights of that stretch was we were like looking at all the critters and animals that were out. So you run the road from that aid station back to the finish is primarily road, leaving the mountains and heading back to the state park, and you run through like farmland. So
Awesome.
our headlamps woke up a herd of cows that started freaking out and mooing at us, and like jokingly saying to her, I was like, that's really happening, right? Like
Just want to make sure.
that was cool. We ran into the what was a very underwhelming finish line. So it
Okay.
was very, very similar to like an Ironman type finish line with a big cattle chute that goes in, but it's raining and it's like 2:30 in the
So
morning
there's nobody.
and there's nobody. So we
Oh.
had my sister and my wife and Charles came out to see me in, but I mean, they were probably sitting in their car until they knew we were like 2 miles out, and then they got out of their car and would walk up to the finish line, and everyone else was doing the same. So there might have been another group of four people, so like
Wow.
10 or less people, and you're running through this real long cattle chute where like you imagine it being lined with people cheering
Yeah,
you to the
like
finish.
UTMB.
Yeah, but no, there was like 10 people.
Oh my gosh.
And then you finish, and you know it was cool. Ran through that whole chute with Emily, you know. Real happy and proud to, you know, have such a good support crew and stuff to come out and even come out at 2:30 in the morning and in the
Yeah.
rain to see me in. But I don't know how I feel about with that kind of finish. I don't know how I feel about a 6 p.m. start on a race, because if that's everyone's experience when they cross the finish line, it's in a way, it's kind of sad. It's just
It is, yeah.
underwhelming. Yeah, I think unless a specific race is, high on my bucket list for a reason, I'll likely avoid the night starts in the future. So we since it was raining cold and 2:30 in the morning, I think we kind of hung out at the finish line for like 5, 10 minutes. I tried to thank Charles and Emily for everything that they did, my family too. So thank you again if they do listen to this. I wish we could have hung out a little more afterwards, but that was the race.
Oh, that's
That's the
awesome. What an
yeah.
awesome memory. Yeah, thanks for taking us through that, man. What a race, dude. You did awesome.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm very happy with my performance. I achieved that goal of running those late miles, and now that I know that, I went back and I looked at some of those aid station times, and anyone could go look at that Strava times. You'll see which
You
ones were the
know
aid
exactly when the aid
stations.
stations, yeah.
Yeah,
Well, cool.
first buckle.
So there you go. You got your first official buckle, well deserved and well earned buckle. On your way to off to Germany, have you scouted out the first race in Germany yet?
I've
Or
been
do we
looking.
not want to say this because your wife is in the same hotel room?
No, she's she already knows that I have aspirations for UTMB and increasing the number of running stones that I have. So I was looking at some of those races that are left in Europe that are UTMB events. And I got her informal blessing a week or two ago that she was okay, traveling somewhere for a race as long as it was like a 50K distance.
Okay.
That way we can still like enjoy some time together wherever we go. And there's a race in Italy and there's a race in Spain that I think
Okay.
are still left. But I think the Italy one sold out. So I think Spain is the only one left. And
Spain
I
it
don't know if it's
is.
gonna. I don't know if it's going to work or not. It's on like an
Yeah.
island off the coast of Spain, so like the
Well, that'll be
logistics
fun.
really aren't easy. That's why it's not sold out, I guess. But we'll see. I'm excited to see the European trail running community because it's supposedly much bigger than what I've experienced.
I'm
Yeah,
jealous.
a 3.5 hour train ride from Chamonix. So at the worst, even if I don't get into the race,
You can
I'll get
still
over
go
there
run
and
the
run.
route, man. There you go. That's awesome. Man, so proud of you, dude. You're rocking it. And like I said, thanks for serving our country and heading overseas with your family and everything. I think this is going to be quite the adventure for you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate the support.
You got it. Well, let's wrap this up. So we ask this of everybody who comes on. The name of the podcast is Living an Ultra Life. What's the first thing that pops in your head when you hear that?
It takes a lot of time,
Yep.
and if you want to live the ultra life, you really need to learn how to balance everything else to be able to live it. Because just the amount of time that goes into a training block, everything else needs to be in order. And if you're married or you have kids, you need that support system to do it. It's not a one-man show.
Well, Anthony, you have a fantastic evening. Have a safe flight over to Germany and tell your wife and your kids thank you for letting me steal you for a little while.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.